Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Manasa.
Manasa.
By the mind.
By the mind.
Grinan.
Grinan.
Accepting.
Accepting.
Bahuva.
Bahuva.
Became.
Became.
Pramada.
Pramada.
Woman.
Woman.
Uttama.
Uttama.
Highly situated.
Highly situated.
Anantaram.
Anantaram.
After death.
Vidarbhasya. Vidarbhasya.
Of Vidarbha.
Of Vidarbha.
Rajasinghasya.
Rajasinghasya.
Of the most powerful king.
Of the most powerful king.
Vishmane.
Vishmane.
Some translation. At the, oh, what? Actually, at the house.
At the house.
Translation. King Puranjana gave up his body while remembering his wife. And consequently, in his next life, he became a very beautiful and well-situated woman. He took his next birth as the daughter of King Vidarbha in the very house of the king. So purport by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Since King Puranjana thought of his wife at the time of death, he attained the body of a woman in his next birth. This verifies the following verse in Bhagavad Gita, 8th chapter, text 6. Yang yang vapismaran bhavan jajate ante kalevaram hang hang vivaiti konteha siddhatad bhava bhavataha. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. When a living entity is accustomed to think of a particular subject matter or become absorbed in a certain type of thought, he will think of that subject at the time of death. At the time of death, one will think of the subject that has occupied his life while he was awake, lightly sleeping or dreaming, or while he was deeply sleeping. After falling from the association of the Supreme Lord, the living entity thus transmigrates from one bodily form to another according to nature's course until he finally attains a human form. If he is absorbed in material thoughts and ignorant of spiritual life, and if he does not take shelter under the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Govinda, who solves all questions of birth and death, he will become a woman in the next life, especially if he thinks of his wife. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 31st chapter, text 1, Karmana Daiva Naitrena. A living entity acts piously and impiously, and sometimes in both ways. All actions are taken into account, and the living entity is offered a new body by his superiors. Although King Puranjana was overly attached to his wife, he nonetheless performed many pious fruitive activities. Consequently, he took the form of a woman. Although he took the form of a woman, he was given a chance to be the daughter of a powerful king. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, in the 6th chapter, text 41, Prapya punya kritam lokan ushtva shasvati samaha suchitam jimatam gehi yoga brashta vijayate. The unsuccessful yogi, after many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, is born into a family of righteous people or into a family of rich aristocracy. If a person falls from the path of bhakti yoga God realization due to the attachment to fruitive activity, philosophical speculation, or mystic yoga, he is given a chance to take birth in a high and rich family. The higher authority is appointed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thus render justice to the living entity according to the living entity's desires. Although King Puranjana was overly absorbed in thoughts of his wife and thus became a woman, he took birth in the family of a king due to his previous pious activities. The conclusion is that all our activities are taken into consideration before we are awarded another body. Narada Muni therefore advised Vyasadeva that one should take to Krishna consciousness, devotional service, and abandon all ordinary occupational duties. This advice was also given by Lord Krishna himself. Although a devotee may fall from the path of spiritual consciousness, he will nonetheless attain a human body in the home of a devotee or a rich man. In this way, one can resume his devotional service. So tam eva manasa grinan babuva pramadottama ananduram vitarvasya rajasingasya vishmane. So, right. Om aganatu madandasya gananjana shlakaya chakshur meditam yena tasmai shigadve namaha. So, as Srila Prabhupada comments here, that a devotee, and Krishna talks about in the Gita, of what happens to a devotee after he leaves his body, if the devotee is not perfect, is one or two different things. One thing is, which is being described here, if he's not so advanced, then he goes to the heavenly planets, and after going to the heavenly planets, takes birth in a family, wealthy family. And if he's very advanced, he takes birth in a family of transcendentalists. So here we sing King Paranjana was not so advanced. In fact, you know, he fell into Maya, although he was performing some devotional service. So we can understand from this, and also the Acharya's comment, that before taking birth as a lady, he actually went to the heavenly planets. It's interesting. And what is that? When the good karma ran out, then he had to take birth on the earth. So this is the situation of King Paranjana. Now, as Prabhupada comments here, it's one's desire that determines what your future birth will be. And it's not just desire, it's karma. Two things work hand in hand to determine your future birth. One is your desire, and the other one is your karma. So sometimes I give the explanation to help people understand this principle better, that it's just like when you go to purchase a car. Two things determine what type of car you're going to get. One is your money, and the other one is your desire. So if one has a lot of money, and they want a very opulent car, they'll probably purchase what? What's an opulent car? A what?
Lamborghini.
A Lamborghini or a Tesla is even better. A Tesla or Mercedes or something like that. And if one has very little money and they want a car, they'll probably purchase this car. Probably you don't know this type of car. It's called a Yugo. Anyone's heard of a Yugo before? You had. It's a car that was produced in Yugoslavia that basically... it's a car that if you want to drive in it, you have to put your feet through the floor. And I think you understand what I'm talking about. And just propel the car with your feet. So, anyway, so this is what actually determines what someone's future birth will be. So the whole purpose of Krishna consciousness is to cultivate Krishna consciousness, is to cultivate the understanding and the meditation on Krishna, so that one will go back to the spiritual world in his next life. So, as we hear from the Acharya statements, that the first rule of Krishna consciousness is to always remember Krishna, and the second rule is to never forget Krishna. So all the other rules are subservient to those two rules. That means you have to structure your life. And we're not talking about breaking the principles. You know, someone may say, well, smoking marijuana will help you remember Krishna. It won't help you remember Krishna. It will put you into an illusion within an illusion. But the point is that one has to structure one's life so that one is actually thinking of Krishna. And that means more than just, you know, doing the regular sadhana. That means acting according to your psychophysical nature and dedicating your activities to Krishna. Because as Krishna states in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir Brahmagno Brahmano Hutam Brahmatena Gantavyam Brahma Karma Samadhinam, that one has to dedicate one's activities to Him. And when one dedicates one's activities to Krishna in absorption, that absorption is termed to be samadhi. You know, generally we hear about samadhi being what some yogi is experiencing by performing hatha yoga or some other meditational process. But the word samadhi means complete absorption. So if one is absorbed in his work for Krishna, then that absorption is Krishna. And as Krishna describes in the Gita, the work becomes transcendental, the result of the work becomes transcendental, and the person performing the work becomes transcendental. It probably gives the example, like if you put an iron rod into a fire, the iron rod actually attains the qualities of fire and becomes non-different in one sense from fire. So when we fully engage in devotional service, that is absorption in Krishna. So that means that one has to understand one's psychophysical nature, or the guru has to understand one's psychophysical nature, to help one become absorbed. And that means varnashram. Now, of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did reject varnashram as being external when he had his conversation with Ramananda Roy. There's this whole, what's called the Ramananda Sambada, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was discussing different things with Ramananda Roy, and he asked Ramananda Roy, what is the ultimate goal of life and what is the process to achieve it? And Ramananda Roy was acting as the professor and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was acting as the student. And Ramananda Roy first replied, varnashram. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, this is simply external. We understand that. However, understanding varnashram in terms of engaging ourselves in devotional service is not an external point, is not actually external. Understanding varnashram is important so that we can actually be happy serving Krishna. Actually, our GBC motto or ISKCON motto is more devotees, happier devotees. That's interesting, isn't it? Of course, that's our vision statement. There's something called the mission statement, which are the seven principles of ISKCON. But the vision statement, you know, what we're actually here for is to become Krishna conscious, obviously, is to have more devotees and have more, when we say happier devotees, that means deeper Krishna consciousness. I'm unpacking that statement. Is to actually have devotees deepen their own Krishna consciousness. And so that everything we do should be subservient, that means to serve those particular principles. You understand? Very important point. And if devotees are not becoming Krishna conscious, then Shrama Eva Hi Kevalam, as Bhagavatam says. Notpadiyad Yadi Ratim Shrama Eva Kevalam. That if you're not, and Krishna consciousness is something internal. It's not simply external. Not simply a bunch of rules and regulations, although we do follow the rules and regulations. But it's to really connect with Krishna in a very deep way, like we were talking about last night. The word shraddha means to actually give your heart to Krishna. You know, we translate it as faith, but actually it means far more than faith. Of course, faith is implicit within the point of giving your heart to Krishna, because giving your heart to someone means that you understand simply by serving Krishna everything is accomplished. In other words, that's all you have to do is give your heart to Krishna. Of course, practically acting in this material world to do that. So one has to somehow or other figure out, according to their psychophysical nature, how to give your heart to Krishna. And if you get too much into rituals, you know, sometimes we have so many rituals in the Krishna conscious movement, and every religion has rituals, then you become disconnected from the actual essence of Krishna consciousness. Like if you think simply of the externals, of course we do follow external things, I'm not decrying that, but if you're simply thinking of the externals rather than the internals, if you're simply chanting your mantras and not understanding the meaning of the mantras. We spoke about this last night, and I've been speaking about this as I travel, that, you know, people chant all these different mantras, and they're not thinking of what they're chanting while they're chanting it. For example, you may be chanting in the Mangalarti, the Guru Vashtika mantras, but are you actually thinking of the meaning of them? or you're just reciting them like a parrot. Like Prabhupada said, a parrot can learn to chant Hare Krishna. Certainly. Actually, we visited devotees who have parrots, they chant Hare Krishna. But Prabhupada said, if you go, of course you shouldn't do this, but if you go and choke the parrot, don't do that. The parrot will simply squawk because it's not in the heart. The parrot is simply emulating what you're doing. A parrot can emulate the sound of a phone ringing. A parrot can emulate any sort of sound. So we should not simply be like parrots in the Krishna consciousness movement. We should be internalizing in a very deep way our connection with Krishna while we're doing our rituals. In other words, understanding the purpose of the ritual, the meaning of the ritual, as you're doing it. So understanding. Understanding, like when you're chanting the Guru Vashtika, and actually another point is, the ritual then becomes a source of ecstasy. If you're chanting the Guru Vashtika, and you're thinking, the spiritual master, the first line of course, the spiritual master, the material world is on blazing fire, and the spiritual master pours down the rain of mercy to extinguish the blazing fire of material existence, as you're chanting it, then you become very enthusiastic during Mangalarti. Or Mahaprabhu Kirtanan Richagita Varitra Madhyan Manaso Rasena. Hare Krishna. Good to see you. So if you're thinking that when the pure devotee hears the kirtan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he starts dancing and becomes joyful, and all the hairs of his body stand on end, and tears, ashrutaranga bhajo, tears flow from his eyes like torrents of rain. If you're thinking of that, then the activity of Krishna consciousness makes you very happy, and you want to go to Mangalarti. Right? But if you're just thinking, oh, it's the same old song, why don't we chant something different this morning, you know, like, My Sweet Lord. So, if you're not thinking of what you're doing while you're doing it, and why you're doing it, then you're going to be disconnected. So that's Krishna consciousness. And then if you're connected like that, then it's easy to remember Krishna at the time of death. Now the question arises, sometimes devotees ask me the question, what can I do if I die? Of course you can't do anything. What can I do if I die and I'm unconscious? You can't do anything. So, what's going to happen? Well, the point is, if you're remembering something throughout your life, if you're pleasing Krishna throughout your life, then Krishna will personally make sure that you remember him at the time of death. The Dhammi, I'll put the shit up part there. Krishna guarantees that I will save that person from the ocean of birth and death. Bhagavad Gita. Ananyas chintayandomam yejanat paripasate tesham nityabayuktamam yogakshema vahamiham. You know that verse? No. Anyway, so that verse says that if one is dedicated to Krishna throughout his life, then what happens? Krishna preserves what he has and carries what he lacks. So if you're unconscious, you're in a coma, Krishna will take care of that. Isn't it? One has to have that faith in Krishna. Okay, so another point, let's see, another point in this verse is interesting. That if one, this is maybe a little controversial, one thinks of his wife at the time of death, he'll become a woman in his next life. And actually, there's no problem with becoming a devotee woman. Is there? Unworthy? No. So, and you know, oftentimes you hear this position of becoming a woman as something that's less than desirable, right? But the point is that if one is Krishna conscious, as Krishna says in the Gita, anyone can approach this supreme destination. And another thing is, if one is Krishna conscious and if one's wife is Krishna conscious, if you think of your wife at the time of death, you can go back to Godhead. Yeah. It's stated in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that the very same attachment that one has for a materialistic person, if it's invested in a spiritualist, in a pure devotee of the Lord, can be the source of one's salvation. So it's not that one should just like look at his wife and say to his wife, you know, you're an agent of Maya. Pramada. Actually, the word pramada is here used for, yeah, pramada otama. You know, the woman is sometimes called in the Vedic literature pramada. And that, the word pramada is quite interesting. There's different words that are used to relate to refer to women in the Vedic literatures. One of them is stri. Another one is pramada. And these words are indicating something that is less than desirable. There's actually good words that refer to women, too. Like Lakshmi, Shri. It's like a husband should not call his wife Stri or Pramada. He should call his wife Priya. You understand? And husband is called, remember what I said? Swami. Not that he just renounce it and renunciate. So, these words are used to indicate the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And also for the wife, the husband can be a bewildering factor too. It's not just that for the man, the woman is the bewildering factor, but for the woman, the man can be bewildering. Like Prabhupada said one time, he said, for the woman, the man is the woman. Meaning, you understand the attractive factor, be pramada. So the word pramada is interesting. Let me describe this word right now. Pramada means very crazy. Mada means like illusion. And pramada, prakasti rupeda, means to emphasize the illusion. Mada. You understand? So pramada. So the woman here is described as pramada. And also, then the other description given for women I mentioned before is stri. The word stri means to increase one's material attraction or involvement in this world. In other words, like if you want to enjoy in this material world, you got to have more than just being in a brahmachari. Don't worry. I'm not trying to convince you not to be a brahmachari. But anyway, if you want to enjoy materially, you got to expand. Pumsa striya, mituni bhav metam, tayor mitu radigranjiya, aho, ato griha kshetra, satapta vitaya, janasya moho yam aham maninti. You know the verse? Probably. All the brahmacharis learn it when they first joined the Hare Krishna movement. I'm sure Gopinath learned it, but he didn't memorize it. So, so that the man and the woman get together, and their lives are very, very simple, not so complex in the beginning. I remember, you know, let's say a brahmachari joins the Hare Krishna movement, and all of his belongings he can fit into a little box. And the woman also, you know, the brahmacharini, she can fit all of her belongings into a little box too, you know, living in the ashram. And then you put the two boxes together, and you get a moving van. You get furniture, children, you know, expands, the whole thing expands dramatically. So, that's why the woman is sometimes called stri. But it's not a complementary term for woman, you understand? So you see in different contexts, there's different words used for woman. But when a woman is a lady, or a soul in a woman's body is a devotee, they're no longer referred to as stri, no longer referred to as pramada. They're referred to as Vaishnavi. You understand? And Prabhupada said that a Vaishnavi's association can help you become Krishna conscious. So we have to really balance this whole thing, because sometimes people read this and they just think, you know, they look at their wife and say, Pramada, Durga, Maya Devi, like that. And they develop an... We've seen this happen before. They develop a negative attitude towards their wife. And they think, oh, when am I going to give you up? You know, just a matter of time. Just have to enjoy my senses now. And then later on, just like, vomit it all out, you know. get rid of it. And that's not the right attitude. Because if one's wife is a Vaishnavi, then you don't even have to take sannyasa at the time of getting old. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, the preferable stage of renunciation in Kali Yuga is something called Kshetra Sannyas. You understand? Kshetra Sannyas means that when you get older and you don't have to engage in economic development anymore, then, and the children are grown up, it's not that you spend the rest of your existence just visiting your grandchildren. Some people do that, you know. They just like expand and expand, and you see a family picture of them with like three generations. So you got three generations, you know, big family. Actually, there's one church called the Mormon Church where people used to have like 20 wives or 21 wives and things like that. And you see like the family picture with thousands of people surrounding them. So when one gets older and is retired, because in each stage of life there's something that's appropriate, you know, then one serves the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with the husband and wife. Not that one simply plays golf with one's wife, you know, or card games. What do they do here? Finland, what do they do when they retire?
Watch TV,
okay. Not that one simply sits with one's wife or mate and watches TV. But at that time, you can preach Krishna consciousness tremendously as householders. You can serve the mission. Just like we have two nice householders here serving the mission. Yeah, actually more than two. They're serving the mission. So you can serve the mission. And that's renunciation right there. Renunciation doesn't mean lighting no fire or performing no work, according to Krishna in the Gita. Renunciation means that actually one fully dedicates one's life, manasa deha geha yokishimor, arpilam tuyapane, nanda kishore, right? That's Bhaktivinoda Thakura's teachings. The mind, the body, your home is yours, nanda kishore. So if one has that attitude, then being attached to one's wife who's a Vaishnavi or being attached to one's husband who is a Vaishnava is not detrimental to Krishna consciousness. It's actually a stepping stone to become Krishna conscious. So you should not take these particular statements out of context like many devotees have done in the past and use it to criticize women or criticize household life or whatever. One should be very balanced in their particular understanding. Anyway, so King Paranjana was not balanced in his understanding and he was attached to sense enjoyment. Another point is that it's not the wife's fault or the lady's fault or the man's fault that you're getting bewildered. It's your fault. You're trying to enjoy them. See, sometimes, that's another point, that the brahmacharis will blame the women for themselves being in maya. It's like, for example, let's say you're attached to eating a particular type of food, pizza, for example. Can you blame the pizza for your attraction? You know, you get angry at the pizza? Yeah, you're maya. No, you're maya. You know, of course, there was a question that was raised. The sage was asked a question by a king. Why is Maya so strong? And the sage ran up to a pillar and embraced the pillar and said, you know, let me go, let me go, let me go. So it's not the object of the senses, whether it's, you know, the opposite sex, the same sex, or some food, or whatever. It's not the fault of the individual or the entity or the object. It's your fault because you want to enjoy it. You have this exploitative mentality. So Paranjana's attachment to his wife was not because he loved his wife. Try to understand that. It's because he loved what his wife could do for him. Please his senses. Do you understand that? It's a difference. Because real love, someone can actually love their wife. That means they're concerned or love their children. That means they're not trying to enjoy them. They're trying to give them Krishna consciousness. That's love. And we are meant to have that sort of love for all the living entities. I mean, for example, let's take the story of Bharat Maharaj. It was another story of someone who changed his body in an unfortunate way. But he was attached to enjoying the baby deer. There was no fault in him helping the baby deer, feeding the baby deer, protecting them. There's no fault. But he was enjoying, and therefore he neglected his spiritual principle. He was using the deer as an object to enjoy. You understand that? So that's the problem in many relationships. We see the other person as an object rather than a subject. Like, I'll look at someone, like I'll look at Gopinath and see him as someone who's supposed to serve me rather than considering, you know, of course, I'm in Maya, rather than considering what's good for him, I look at him just like my computer. He's one of my aspects of my paraphernalia. You understand? That's what the enjoyment of the someone else is. They're just like an aspect, like, for example, people get married. Well, I know people get married. So, a trophy wife, you heard of this before? Just like that. There's a president of one particular country who married a girl from, you know, Slovenia, which happens to be my GBC zone he messed in. And because he wanted to have a trophy. You know a trophy? Like, a trophy means, like, let's say if I win a golf championship, they'll give me, like, one of these trophies. You know what a trophy is? You know, with a golf... You know, the golf club, and there's someone hitting, you know, number one. I got some trophies when I was young. Not in golf. In scuba diving. Because I was a topmost scuba diver. Anyway, so, you know, people look at their wives like that, like a trophy wife. I want to show her off. Or a trophy husband. I'm going to show him off. And that's objectifying the person. It's just like eating meat. You know, the meat, people don't think where the meat comes from. Where does it come from? Trees. From a bush, like McDonald's tells you that. It comes from a living entity. So people don't understand that, you know, the person whom they're trying to enjoy is also an individual. I mean, they may say that. They may theoretically understand that. But they don't understand, or they don't think of the other person's benefit. And that's not love. So Paranjana, you could say he loved his wife, but that was lust. If he really loved his wife, he would be simply interested in helping her become Krishna conscious. Protecting her, yes, there's no problem with that. And if Bharat Maharaj actually loved the deer, he would be chanting Hare Krishna into the poor deer's ear. And performing his spiritual activities more sincerely, more dedicatedly, so that he would be able to be Krishna conscious and help the deer. You understand? Just like Lord Rishabhadev says, no one should become what? You know this verse?
Yeah.
What is it?
No one should be.
Come, husband.
Yeah, husband.
No one should become guru.
Demigod.
Or mother. Or father. Unless they're actually capable and willing to save their dependents from the cycle of birth and death. So that's the point. So we can have these relationships. You know, they can be married relationships. They're any type of relationship. As long as you're trying to help the person. And that's your concentration. That's your meditation. And that relationship, as we mentioned before, Brahma Pranam, Brahma Havir, while you're engaged in it, that relationship becomes purified, becomes spiritual. The results of your relationship become spiritualized. And you don't have to worry about taking another birth in the material world. Or if you take another birth in the material world, you take another birth to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anyway, so I just wanted to give a balanced viewpoint of this whole story of Paranjana here and how he becomes Vidarbhi, becomes a woman in the next life. So any questions or comments? Yes.
Maharaj, I heard a statement that one doesn't die before his next body is determined. So assuming that it's true, how we can reconcile this with the statement in Bhagavad Gita, which says that whatever we think in the moment of death, then this such destination we achieve. Because it seems that if one dies at the moment when his next body is ready, already it's like predetermined and it's independent of the last thought.
So where is that statement?
I just heard it, you know, like a common...
There should be a Shastric injunction. Likewise, I was talking to the devotees the other day that unless something has actually been spoken by our acharyas or is in the Shastra, I don't know. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. So, however, based upon my reading of Shastra, one's body, first of all, one has to spend some time with Yamaraj. And also, we have the story of Ajamil in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, who was dying, and he basically, we can't say that his next body was determined. He got his story is sometimes called second chance. That's how it's sometimes labeled, second chance. Because he was dying, he was supposed to be taken by Yamaraj, and actually it's the Yamaraj who judges what type of body. I mean, that's the story, that's the Shastric injunctions that I hear all the time. That you go to Yamaraj, and he opens up his book. Your computer, sorry. I'm dated myself, He opens up his super... He has this scribe named Chitragupta. You heard that name before? Chitragupta. He writes down when you've been naughty and when you've been nice. Something like Santa Claus, You know that poem about Santa Claus? Santa Claus? No. You better watch out. You ever heard that? He knows when you've been, naughty. He knows when... No, you don't know that. You've heard it. So Chitragupta is something... something like Santa Claus or whatever. Yamaraj is not exactly like Santa Claus. So Chitragupta is writing down... It's described about Jagai and Madai that Chitragupta got writer's cramp. Writer's cramp, when you're writing on carpal tunnel syndrome? In other words, there were so many sinful activities executed by Jagai and Madai that it filled a bottomless pit. So there's this book about your life, Gopinath. I always pick on him. He's my object. So there's a book about your life if you're not a devotee. Because if you chant Hare Krishna, it's like pressing the delete button. on the computer? You can press the delete button. You can delete all the files and you'd scramble them and everything like that. So when you chant Hare Krishna, there's no more karma. Even Parabdha karma is finished at that particular point. All karmas, even Nama Bas chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So there's this book. So you're taken before Yamaraj or one of his assistant judges. He's pretty busy nowadays. And he pulls out this book or video. This is your life. This was your life. And then you see if Gopinath, you see the video of you eating too many sweets, not obeying your spiritual master,
not staying in Finland.
You see this video, you say, "Oh my God, I did that." Because it's described that Yamaraj, by the dint of his connection with Super Soul, is all pervading. That's the description. I mean, he's not God. He's not all-pervading. But because of his connection, just like if you're connected with the internet, even though you may not be in a particular location, you can see what's going on in a particular place. Like people are watching me. We've got 16 people watching me right now from all over the world. So they're not all-pervading, but the internet is all-pervading. I'm using a, you know, metaphor right there. So Yamaraj is able to see everything. There's no closed doors, because Super Soul's there everywhere. You can't just put a lead shield in front of your heart to keep Super Soul from watching you. So he knows when you've been bad or good. So anyway, Yamaraj, he has this giant book given to him by Chitragupta, and he passes judgment. And then he prepares you for your next body by doing interesting things with you, like forcing you to eat your own flesh, you know. Anyway, there's so many. Fifth Canto deals with all this interesting amusement park things. It's like a nice version of Disney World. Horror House, you know. One time I went to Disney World with Chai Pataka Maharaj, and you went into the House of Horrors. You know, so you go, there's a witch that jumps out at you. So Yamaraj has this in a much more sophisticated virtual reality way that's really frightening. And then he prepares you for your next body, and then you take your next body. However, if at the time of death you chant Hare Krishna, then you don't have to worry about that. So I don't, you know, I have not read anything that states that your next body is there. I mean, there may be some preparatory work, but nothing's for sure. Of course, at the time of death, I mean, you can chant Hare Krishna, or you may have a child who's a devotee who chants Hare Krishna into your ear. Or you may, like I was talking to a devotee here, I'm not going to mention their name because they'd lose their job. So when they work in a hospital, so when someone leaves the body, they chant Hare Krishna into the person's ear, rub some Ganges water on the person's head, which is illegal, and the person becomes free from Yamaraj as a result of that. Or another point is that if you're involved in Indian society, you can do a pinda for your departed forefathers. You've heard of that before, pinda? And you can keep them in heaven for some time. That's why a son or a daughter is called putra putri. So you can actually, there's some mitigating factors insofar as what happens in the next life. That's why in certain countries they've actually perverted this whole ceremony of pinda, like in Fiji, they call it shrud. You've heard of this before? And so they actually have, it's interesting, they have a period of 2 weeks called pitta paksh. You've heard of this before? Where, in India too, where you're not supposed to worship the deities, you're not supposed to chant Hare Krishna. Or do anything, because you worship your forefathers by not doing things in a bona fide way. What you do is you leave out whatever they like to eat during their lifetime, even if they like to smoke cigarettes. You leave a plate out for them to eat or smoke, right? That's Fiji. Fiji is actually really interesting how they do things like that. But anyway, so there's many mitigating factors that can change. You know, even what one's children do can change one's future. Like it's described, if you have one child in your family as a devotee, then so many generations, sometimes 11, 10, whatever it is, generations backwards and forwards become liberated. So let's say if you have a child who becomes a devotee, even though you may be, oh, Haranyakashipu, and Prahlad Maharaj is asking Lord Nrisimhadev, you know, please, what, free my father, then you're freed. So I would tend to differ with that particular understanding. Actually, it's really important. The point you brought up is important in regard to another point, indirectly to another point, that we have all these different, let's say, rumors or things in Krishna consciousness that we hear, even like Prabhupada said stories. like Prabhupada one time says, if you hear a Prabhupada said story, he said, I didn't say it. So we have all these different things that we really get into. I was just discussing with someone yesterday about this principle in Ekadasi called the Papa Purush. You've heard of that before? That means your sinful father, Papa Purush. Anyway, I know it doesn't mean that. Papa means sin. Purush means person. So, you know, there's this whole discussion that in Ekadasi, this sinful person enters into grains. You've heard about this before? And then they quote from the Padma Purana. But the problem is that many of the Puranas have been changed. And none of our acharyas have actually mentioned it. So there's three things called Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. Of course, I do follow Ekadasi. I follow Ekadasi not because of the Papa Purush. I'm worried about him. I follow Ekadasi because that's the order of the acharyas, and I know Ekadasi is a special day for remembering Krishna to make spiritual advancement. So, you know, I'm not saying this whole Papa Purush is true or not true. I don't know. I don't know, because it hasn't been given by the acharyas. You know, there's a lot of stuff in the Puranas, like Shripad Madhvacharya says the Mahabharata, for example, has been changed dramatically. You know, there's a lot of stuff that the acharyas don't give us or haven't been passed down in disciplic succession that we can... don't know absolutely. We know something absolutely if it's given by the acharyas, or it's in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which has been passed down in disciplic succession, or it's in the Bhagavad Gita, or it's in the Vaishnava literature is given to us by the acharyas. However, you know, some things have been changed throughout the ages. I mean, that's an important point to understand. So we have to be careful what we present as truth, as absolute truth. Does that make sense? What do you think, Gopinath? Yes, you have to agree. So, we should be careful what we present as absolute truth. Guru, Shastra, Sadhu. You understand? And even sometimes the bona fide guru will say things that are relative rather than absolute. This is called hermeneutics. Like I will say, I think quinoa is the best food. Now, that's not an absolute statement, although it's absolutely true. No, it's not. So, you know, because as an individual, I'm entitled to my own opinions. So when I'm speaking from Shastra, then you can know it's absolutely true. But if I'm speaking my own opinion about what food I like or what country I like the best, Finland. So... that's an advertisement. Anyway, then that's relative. So one has to really have this whole principle of checks and balances, Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu, on anything. So when someone says something, usually if I don't know where it comes from, I ask. Like Prabhupada said, we have to be like lawyers. A lawyer, when he's arguing in court, will not just say to the judge, you know, I think this guy looks good. You know, he's probably not guilty. He's a sweet guy. And, you know, I don't know if that's actually the law. I think this should be the law instead of that's the law. That's what I heard. I heard from my friend that it's all right. It's all right to smoke marijuana. My friend said it's legal. So he has to... it may be legal here someday. The United States, it is some certain places, but so you have to be able to quote from the law book. The lawyer has to be able to quote from the law book. So we as devotees have to be able to quote from Shastra. That's why we learn Shastra, not just I think. The Prabhupada said, if you say I think, you're a rascal. I mean, you could say I think about relative things. You know, I think it's going to rain today. That doesn't mean you're a rascal just because you said that. But if you speak in absolute terms and you say, I think, I mean, I'm not going to call someone a rascal. That means that's not really how a spiritualist should be talking about. I think we're not the body. I feel we're not the body. No. I know we're not the body. Why? Why do I know that we're not the body? What's the shastra for it? Vasamsi jirnani yata vihaya. You know that verse?
Oh, you don't know that.
Yeah. That just as we take on, we give up old and useless clothes and take on new clothes, similarly the soul takes on the new body, giving up the old and useless body. So anyway, dehe nosmin yata dehe. We have so many verses. Because that is Guru Shastra and Sadhu. I know Krishna is God. Why? Ahustvam rsiyat sarve devar shir naradas tata. You know the verse?
Say again.
Param Brahma, Param Dhamma.
Well, that's Arjuna's
Yeah, yeah.
Reference.
But yeah, but he said, he gives shastric reference and sadhu reference for this. He says, Ahustvam rsiyat sarve devar shir naradas tata. You know the verse?
Yeah, I don't remember it, but
okay.
I know where the
funny in the Gita. So, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma. You are the supreme abode, the supreme purifier, Pavitram, Idam, Uttama. And how do I know this? Because all the great sages have said this. So he verifies or justifies his statement with Yasadu, right? He doesn't say, well, because you're my friend, Krishna, and you do all these cool things. You know, because he did see Krishna do a lot of cool things, right? I mean, he's Krishna's friend. I mean, obviously, you're really a cool guy, Krishna. He must be God. You know, just like people think some bogus people are God. Like, what's that, just like Baba or something like that? Why? Why do I think you're God? Because you can produce ashes out of the air. Vibhutis, they call it. Right? No, we know Krishna's God because all the great sages, Narada, Vyas, Asita, Devala, they accept Krishna as God. Not just because Krishna says, I am God. Because the great sages, that's Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu right there. So everything we believe in has to be based on Shastra and Sadhu. You fall asleep. And Guru. Okay, any other questions? Yes?
Thank you very much, Maharaj.
Thank you.
You mentioned about Bharat and he's chanting Hare Krishna. And if you, like, scare
choke him.
Choke him, then he'll, like, say
squawk.
Squawk. I was listening to the memories of Srila Prabhupada that he was not chanting in Vrindavan names of Radha Radha. And the question is, like, sometimes devotees, like,
uh-oh,
it might be like somebody can step on your feet or some devotee's feet and you can hear Krishna's name.
Yeah.
So is this chanting, is it offensive? Because it's not like we are really kind of mean it, we just say it. So is it like, can you elaborate on that?
First you mentioned Radha Radha. What did that have to do with the question?
I just thinking that, like, yeah, it's a bit different topic, but like, what happens in Vrindavan, that you just become just like saying hello.
Radha Radha. Well, there's benefit. There's benefit to chanting Hare Krishna or Radha Radha. I mean, obviously there's benefit to do that. But one should be conscious of what they're doing. There's much more benefit than Namabhas chanting means chanting, you know, meaning something else or accidentally or ritualistically. I mean, that may be Namabhas chanting. And there's a benefit. And the benefit is, what is the benefit? That you become free from all karma, you get liberated, but you can't get pure devotional service from Namabhas chanting. So it's, I mean, I'm not saying don't chant Radhe Radhe and don't chant Hare Krishna when someone steps on your foot. I mean, it's good to get in that habit. I have that habit when someone else is driving a car, I always chant Hare Krishna. you know, the people question me sometimes, why you just go Hare Krishna like that when someone else is driving the car? And so because I've developed this habit, when anything scary happens, I go Hare Krishna, because death may come. So I think it's all right, but one should, as far as possible, try to become. It's not wrong to chant Hare Krishna when, you know, you're scared or something like that. But as far as possible, one should be conscious of that Krishna, nama chintamani Krishna's chaitanya rasa vigra, purna shuddha nitya mukta vinadva, that Krishna's there. And there's a great, much more, infinitely more benefit of chanting Hare Krishna in a mood of devotion. I mean, obviously, if someone steps on your toes, you go Hare Krishna. Krishna's not going to say, why weren't you devotional when someone stepped on your toes? I mean that's an extreme circumstance. But when we're chanting our rounds, or chanting generally, then we should do with a mood of devotion, of love, of trying to please. Devotion means, love means trying to please. Not trying to get pleasure from Krishna, but trying to give Krishna pleasure. I'm dancing for the deities to give Krishna pleasure. I'm doing arti to give Krishna pleasure. Yome bhakta prayachuti. So it's all right to chant when someone steps on your toe. Instead of going, ouch, you have that word in Finnish? Ouch? No. Ouch?
Yeah, we do.
Same word?
Yeah, same pronunciation.
Oh, really? Ouch! So instead of going, ouch, it's better to go, Krishna! Develop the habit of always chanting. But insofar as possible, we should be conscious of what we're chanting while we're chanting, and doing it with devotion. It's an interesting story about Radhe Radhe. That, of course, I spend a lot of time in Govardhan. So, of course, everyone there is saying Radhe Radhe. So, you know, that's what I do to greet people. You know, sometimes I say Hare Krishna, but, you know, you get into the mood there. They say, Radhe, 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 Radhe. It's kind of nice. And so then, after being in Govardhan for about 2 weeks, I went to Mayapur. And in Mayapur, they just say Hare Krishna. So I approached one of my godbrothers, and without thinking that I was in Mayapur, I said, Radhe, Radhe. And he started yelling at me. You nonsense! You rascal! What did I do? You said Radhe, Radhe. Anyway, I said, I apologize for chanting Radharani's name. Hare Krishna. Okay, yeah, good question. Yeah.
I like parrots. Sukha. If we repeat Shastras and Sadhu's words, I will like parrots. I will like parrots. We repeat after Shastras, after Krishna's words,
yeah,
and after saints' words.
Is that like parrots? No, we can put Krishna's words into our own language, you know, but we have to justify what we say with Shastra. Like you hear, when I'm quoting verses from the Gita, I'll actually paraphrase the verses, put it in my own language. But I can justify it by going back to the original Shastra. Obviously, yes, I don't suggest learning verses just like a parrot. Sometimes people do that, and they don't really think of the meaning of the verses. You know, they can recite the verses, but if you ask them to say the verse backwards, and they can't do it, that means they really don't understand the meaning of the verse. Or they don't know the words, the individual words, the translations. So the whole point of Shastra is as a check and balance. Guru Shastra and Sadhu is a check and balance on anything people say. Not that one repeats like a parrot. That's a good point you made. Thank you for making that point. So that you should be able to question, if I'm talking in class and making some philosophical point, you should be able to ask me, where did you get that information from? You know, what Shastra? Or, what, you know, let's see, when Prabhupada said that, where did you get the information from? And if I can't provide the information, then it's my own opinion. Does that make sense? Okay, any other questions? Yes.
This does this verse which says that less advanced yogi takes birth in a family of rich merchants.
First in the heavenly planets.
And then the more advanced takes birth in the family of devotees.
Transcendentalists.
Does this practice, does this mean devotional practice or any?
Yeah. It means, you know, devotee family. Like a impersonalist. First of all, the impersonalist would probably go up to the Brahma-jyoti and then come back down again. Ruyukachena param padam tata patanchi yusmadangrayaha. And so, when we're talking about transcendentalists, because the point is, the only thing you get to take with you from lifetime to lifetime is your spiritual, is your devotional spiritual advancement. You don't get to take your impersonal realization from one lifetime to another. You know, swap them up, yasya dharma shatrayate mahato bayat. That, you understand? So whatever advancement you take. So that would refer to a devotee family. Yeah?
I mean, I think it sounds much better to be, take birth in a poor devotee family or instead of in a rich family with some of maybe devotees. Why is this considered so nice, take birth in a rich family?
Well, so one will have, Prabhupada explains that, so one will have the opportunity without being so much concerned with economic development. Yeah, Prabhupada. That's right. Because, but the person didn't fully take it up before. Prabhupada commented one time that he didn't surrender to Krishna in this lifetime. He'll get an opportunity in the next lifetime, but who's to say that he'll take that opportunity? Because, you know, his devotional service was not so advanced. He was basically, we're talking about, to a certain extent, a Sakama devotee, like the demigods, you know, someone who's doing devotional service for ulterior purposes. His primary purpose is not really to become Krishna conscious, to serve Krishna, to surrender to Krishna. So therefore, that person, he wants to go to the heavenly planets. I mean, it sounds like really good. And he wants to take birth in a rich family. And there's advantages to take birth in a rich family. I mean, I took birth in a rich family. You know, and not a king's family, obviously. I'm not from England. So, I took birth in a rich family, and that gave me an opportunity to basically have all the amenities of life and see that they were all fruitless. In other words, before I joined the movement, I had sports cars, we had our own airplane, private airplane. I had anything I wanted, no debt, any amount of money I wanted, and it didn't give me happiness. You know, if I had been born in another situation with nothing, I might have been thinking, you know, wow, got to dedicate my life to making money so I can become happy. Like you see sometimes people in India, they're hankering to come to the Western world, isn't it? Because they're thinking, wow, this is Vaikuntha, you know, heavenly planet. Of course, the Western world's not like the heavenly planets. It's more like Yamaraja's place. But India is quite much better. So people who are poor sometimes, so I wasn't hankering. I was just like fried out with the material world. You know, I was materially exhausted. Akinchana Gochara. Because I had everything. And so therefore, it was pretty easy for me just to say, hasta la vista. That's Spanish. It means goodbye to the material world and join Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada sometimes would preach to people in India about his disciples' past opulent lives. He would say, you know, this person, we had one of my godbrothers, his father was the owner of Seagram's Liquor. You know, you heard of Seagram's Liquor? No. Big liquor company. One of the biggest in the world. Actually, Mother Ermila, who some of you know, her father was the owner of one of the biggest wine company in the world. Rich family, you know, super rich family. So you'll see this with many of the devotees who joined in the early years. You know, where they came from very, very wealthy families. And because of that, it was quite easy for them to not be interested in material things anymore. So there's an advantage like that. I mean, I would prefer to be born in a family of transcendentalists. I got to tell you that. I'm not saying it's better to be born in a family, in a rich family. I mean, I'd rather be born in a devotee family, have my mother chanting Hare Krishna and, you know, take sannyas at 9 years of age. Much rather have that. So, like Sripad Madhvacharya, you know that story. He took sannyas at 9. Pretty good. I mean, yeah, if you gave me a choice right now, because I've gone through this, you know, I've become a little more advanced in this lifetime than I was in the last lifetime, hopefully, then I would choose a devotee family. So, I think we have to end now. Right?
Yeah, it's quite late.
It's quite late. Okay, Gopinath. So, all glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada.
Yes, I will just be a brief and first of all, Maharaj Saki.